I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We'll be taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And Ton, we're all kind of in the holiday mode. How was your Thanksgiving?
Good. Got to spend time with family and a few days off work, so it was really good. How was yours?
It was great, but you actually went into a store yesterday, which I do not ever go into a store on Black Friday.
You know, I think that it's 10, 15, 20 years ago, that mad rush.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't noticed it the last few years.
Okay, so it's kind of calmed down.
Yeah,
I would have been safe.
We were in a Ross in Provo, and it was just like any other day in there. And we hit a few other stores that were busier than usual. But I remember, you know, in my 20s and early 30s, almost being trampled and people fighting over
right.
things. And I just, it seems like out of liability, almost the stores have stopped. I don't know.
Right.
But
they've stopped the crazy sales.
Yes.
Yeah. No. And a lot of families have made this a wonderful family tradition. But for me, I just think crowds and I think, that's okay. I can do it next week.
I talked to somebody that stayed the night in a tent outside Sportsman Warehouse. And I think they kind of made an event out of it and had some heaters in there. And
they're
things,
a lot hardier than I am.
Yes.
Obviously. Well, this morning, plant of the week, Norfolk Island Pine, kind of fitting in with the tradition of starting our holiday decorating. This is a great one if you don't want to plant or buy a huge Christmas tree. These kind of do very nicely.
They do. Norfolk Island Pine is native to a little island off of New Zealand, a few hundred miles, called Norfolk Island, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the area that New Zealand and these a few islands sit, there's New Caledonia in there and a few others, were part of an old submerged continent called Zealandia. And so there was this whole group of plants and animals and things native to Zealandia that are obviously mostly extinct, but there's mm-hmm. these little pockets, including New Zealand and Norfolk Island and things that have a lot of these exotic plants native. And so Norfolk Island pine has a long history to it. It was around when the dinosaurs were. We have fossil records of it in the United States, which is at least related species, which is quite interesting. But they were discovered by European settlers. The Polynesians and other groups of people knew of them, obviously, but mm-hmm. they were discovered by European explorers in, I think, 1500s or 1600s and brought back to Europe and then North America, grown in conservatories and things, and it was found that they are a very usable houseplant.
Right. Not only are they smaller, but they're the ones that you see in the grocery stores, and, you know, they're potted up and but they have much daintier, I'm going to use that word, daintier, softer kind of branches.
They do. They are one that almost, when they're young, look like an upside down pine tree. Sometimes they're inappropriate, called umbrella pine.
Mm-hmm.
But they are one that are very distant related to pines and things. They're kind of in the same, I don't even know how to describe it, but, you know, very, very distantly related. And I, one thing I will say about them is they're actually quite easy to take care of.
Okay.
And we shouldn't really, if you like houseplants, they shouldn't be discarded after Christmas because they will live for years and years as a houseplant.
Okay, but can you ever put them outside?
Yes, very carefully. Now, they grow in Southern California and Central and South Florida outdoors.
So they might do well in St. George, but not here.
Well, not even St. George, but what you would have to do is put them in a pot and then very slowly transition them to them being a patio plant. Mm. And so just, you know, a half hour of shade one day and then just slowly over a couple of weeks, get it accustomed to probably bright shaded light, maybe on the north or east side of a home. But yeah, you can put them on your patio and then you would, you know, we talked about last week about quarantining and things, bring them back in and get them accustomed to lower light levels in the house. So if someone's happens to be listening in Los Angeles or San Diego, absolutely, they can be grown outside.
You can plant it outside for sure.
Yes. These will tolerate cooler temperatures. So if you have a basement room that happens to have like a daylight basement, bright light, but the heat isn't as great down there, they do really well in temperatures in the 50s and 60s because where they are native, it's actually kind of warm, subtropical, closer to maybe something like Orlando or a little farther north where they can get a little bit of cool temperatures in the winter.
Right.
So if you have them as a houseplant, they're really low maintenance. Fertilize them with houseplant fertilizer in the summer. They don't need a lot in the winter. You know, keep them away from heat registers, drafty doors leading outside. But they're actually one that will live for years and they're very easy to take care of.
How big will they get, though?
If they are in a container and you only transplant them every 2 to 3 years, they will only grow between 3 and 6 inches a year.
Okay.
So they'll stay down, but if you put one in a larger pot and give it ample fertilizer, in the wild, these want to be 50 to 100 feet tall.
And but I could see where they'd be really neat on the patio in the summer, for sure.
I've seen several situations where people have planted these in large buildings in the soil, and they're 30 feet tall. You know, BYU had some for a while in one of their buildings. There's a company here in the north part of Salt Lake that has some. J&J Nursery used to have some planted, and especially when they're planted in native soil, their growth rate speeds up. But in a pot, if they have a lot of soil, a lot of nutrients, they will grow. And so in a pot over the years, it isn't unreasonable for them to get 8, 10, 15 feet tall. But if you transplant them less often, they won't get that big.
Right. This is a great option for someone who doesn't have a lot of space, if they're in an apartment, or someone who is maybe in a senior center. I mean, these are just kind of the perfect size to still have a Christmas tree, but not have it be too overwhelming.
Yes. And they're great for that. I know that, you know, I'm kind of curmudgeonly and just happy to be with myself sometimes and instead of visiting with people. But these are one that I know that as you know, we get older, the kids may not be coming home for Christmas as much, but you want a Christmas tree. This is one that can do double duty as a houseplant and a Christmas tree.
Well, there are so many cute. I actually bought one for my mom in her later years and because she refused to put up a tree anymore. But there were so many cute little tiny ornaments that you could put on them. So
yes.
They can be super festive and super fun.
They can be, and they're just one that are super durable. There are a few other relatives that you occasionally find mm-hmm. in garden centers. One of them is called Monkey Puzzle Tree.
What?
And they call it that because the tree, someone said that it would be a puzzle for a monkey to climb because the leaves on it or the needles are very sharp. It's a little more hardy than this one, but you'll see them sometimes outside as kind of a novelty. But there's some other ones out there that you can look at. But 95% of the time, if you're finding what are called Araucaria or species, Norfolk Island pine is going to be the most common, the most friendly to you if you run into it, and the easiest to take care of.
And now I want one really badly.
A monkey puzzle?
No, one of these, the Norfolk Island pines. Okay. Well, maybe. But what kind of light did you say it needs? Now I'm trying
usually
to decide,
bright filtered light. They can tolerate moderate light if you transition them to it, but bright filtered light. So off to the side of a west or south window, turned weekly just so that they keep the foliage all the way around.
All right. Phone lines are open. You can find out more about the Norfolk Island Pine on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We have an article already up for you. Number to call with your questions. Phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you. We are taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us a question at 57500. First listener, Ton, says, do you have any information on a tree named Prairie Stature Oak? They've seen pictures, but no information on how well they do in Utah.
It's a newer introduction, but it should do fine. It's a hybrid between two oaks that do well here in Utah. So you have American white oak and English oak, which are fairly closely related, even though they're native to different continents. And because both of them do well, I suspect this one will be just fine. My biggest concern is its size. If you've got to have space, because it'll get 40 by 50.
A big one.
So it's a big oak, but yeah, it should do just fine. And being a hybrid, I would imagine it'll grow faster than most other oak trees.
It's a pretty one.
It is. Oh. Has kind of a rough pyramidal shape to it instead of rounded, a little bit more formal shape, which I think is very pretty.
Yeah. Is this one a clean tree or a dirty tree?
Well, it'll form acorns, and they will probably not really start to form until after 5 to 10 years in the ground. And they'll only be heavy every 2 to 3, maybe even 5 years. Not every year, but yes, it does produce acorns. That's just kind of what
it does.
Oaks do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they may not be viable being a hybrid. I suspect they will be. But over time, it will produce those acorns, and they need to be prepared for that. But any large shade tree, with very few exceptions, you know, if you plant maples, you're going to get the smars, the helicopters. If you plant honey locust, a lot of those are seedless, but a lot of them revert and produce those bean pods. So that's the other thing to take into consideration. But this is a tree that, if it is treated well, will be around long after we are dead. So
the next question cracks me up, honestly, because it starts out with the garden quack says, put Epsom salt and Listerine on lawns, and they want to know any truth to that.
No. Well, I'll take that
That's
back.
They're a quack, so
I think we should name the person we had a conversation about a few weeks ago. I'm going to deem him the person who should.
It could have been a woman.
Well, it could have been, but the person we were talking about is he who should not be mentioned.
Oh, right.
That's what we'll call him, Voldemort, the horticulture Voldemort. The Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate, is the chemical name, or chemical, or the compounds, or elements, whatever, until I failed chemistry.
Oh, don't but look at me. I was worse than you.
No, sure. But if you've tested your soil and it's short in those, maybe. But the other part of the Listerine is just, like I said.
Why would you say Listerine? Why?
I mean, it tastes so bad that
maybe
you want to spray it on your lawn because you can hardly handle the stuff. But, I mean, otherwise, I just don't think, man, I just go get a spray with micronutrients in it. You can pick one up for $6 or $7 and spray it on your lawn.
And not worry that it's going to kill the lawn.
Yeah, you're going to pay $4 or $5 for Listerine, another $4 or $5 for Epsom salts. You're not going to have the rates to mix them. Yeah. So I just, this is another one of those things to where that's one way they get us is that, you know, you've got some folksy guy or someone folksy sitting on TV. They probably have a beard and, you know, sitting in a rocking chair saying, well, you know, my wisdom says you need to put Epsom salts and Listerine on your lawn and you're okay.
Well, but in fairness, they call themselves the garden quack.
Yes. And that's, I think they realize this is probably not something that they should be doing just because they're wasting money. Is it going to harm anything? Probably not. But is it going to benefit anything? Probably not. So I wouldn't waste my money. Now, there are, you know, there's a lot of old-timey wisdom saying use Epsom salts when you plant roses. And again, to really know if you need to use them, you need to test your soil.
You know, they're really good for soaking your feet. Just put hot water, soak
they
your
are.
Feet. It's really good that way.
It is. So
proper usage.
Yeah, I just, for the former pseudo horticulturist who should not be mentioned, this is another one of those recipes of nonsense. And just get some micronutrients from your garden center and put them on your lawn if you need them.
All right. Beth is in Mapleton. Good morning, Beth. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm good. Just have a problem with this big old maple tree. It's not really old. I expect apples and pears not to shed their leaves very soon, but this one hasn't lost a leaf, and it's green and big. How long are we going to have to take care of that? And when it falls, its leaves do finally fall, when will that be? And will we have to get them out of off the property when they fall?
Well, this is one of those things that I wish we could play, you know, that old song for every season. You know, they're, you know, it's just, we're going to have to be patient.
My mom's old records to do that.
The answer to this is just be patient. We went from warm to cold too quickly, and many trees have not had time to go through the physiological processes of actually shedding their leaves. And so I think that the maple will be okay. You know, if we get heavy, wet snow, it could break some branches out. But this has happened 3 or 4 times in the last 10 years, and every time the trees have come through.
Several of our trees in Mapleton around the cemetery, they've got flowering pears, and they're still holding on to their leaves.
Pears especially. Sycamores, there's several of them. It was just really uncommon for trees like the lindens and the maples to do this, but we transitioned from warm to cold so quickly that the trees just kind of scorched from the frost. You know, they froze, the same damage, but they froze to the tree, and so eventually they'll fall off, but in a lot of situations, it may be next spring.
That's what I thought you said. My son's got a big linden tree, and it's still got 3/4 of its leaves, and he's got a oak tree right by it, and it's still got its leaves. All my oaks leaves are down. But
yeah. Some of the oaks have a genetic tendency to hold their leaves for the winter until spring, and so it could just be the genetics of the tree. English oak has a tendency to do that, to where a lot of our native oaks will drop. And so it's either probably an English oak or has English oak genetics in it. And that's what's causing.
Well, my oaks are okay, but this one oak just hasn't. But the others are all gone. But is there anything we can do to spray an oak tree to keep it from forming acorns? I'm tired of raking acorns.
Well, you can look at a label for a product called Florel. And it's just spelled F-L-O-R-E-L, growth regulator, and see if you can find something on that it will take care of it. You'd have to spray when the tree have the catkins on. and spray those catkins themselves.
All right. Beth, thanks so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Richard, you're up next when we come back. Number to text, 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.